Thank you.
Okay. So Ann asked me to speak today about our experiences with specialty grain sorghum breeding, and so I'm happy to do that. Most of you that have seen grain sorghum, it's either red or white. There are different colors. This little schematic shows we've got all kinds of dark reds and whites and even blacks. And specifically, today we're talking about the blacks. The black sorghums are germplasm we've had in our program. When I got to the program in 1995, it had been there for at least 15 or 20 years. Before that, it was a novelty. We used to use it as border row because everyone could tell where the trial ended and where the next one started. That all changed when some of this data was presented and interest in antioxidants came around. And looking at some of the specialty type sorghums, which you see labeled brown 1, brown 2, and black and red there, those are all sorghum brands compared to the blueberry, plum, strawberries that were commonly the first noted as having high antioxidants. And we looked at that and said, wow, that's pretty high. Can we use that? Long story short, that work started in the late 1990s, and with that renewed interest, and we needed a couple things to happen in order for this to become useful. First of all, we had to breed a hybrid. The inbred line that we had it in, the yields were terrible, about 20% of a normal commercial grain sorghum yield, not really viable. To breed a hybrid, we had to put the black trait on both sides of the pedigree because it's a recessive trait. That took some time and some learning. We also needed a way to phenotype the antioxidant content. Doing it in a wet lab with chemistry was not cutting it. Couldn't get the numbers through at the price to make that work, so we needed some NIR calibration curves. And finally, and probably the most important thing, we needed someone who would actually take this and commercialize it. And so we had all of these needs that over 15 years coalescing around 2010, 2011, we got an NIR calibration curve. We had done the breeding. We had been talking to people that had interest in this type of material. And the question then became, how do you distribute this? We have an end user who's interested, an end user meaning someone who wants to put this in grain products, cereals, etc. We're not a seed company, so how do you do this? What we settled on, and when we talked to seed companies, they said, well, that's interesting, but your acreage or your production requirements for this are too small to get us interested in it. So we've got a balance between the two, and what we compromised on was that we actually released the two inbred lines, PVP'd those, and then made a public announcement of the hybrid itself, which we designated Onyx, and we offered it to end users. Okay, with the caveat that they would have to do some things and we would have to do some things in that. The hybrid itself was significantly higher in phenols, tannins, and 3-DOAs. That's what the end users wanted for their antioxidant claims and health food claims. In terms of height and yield, it was maturity. It was similar to commercial varieties. It is lower in grain yield, so whoever grows it's going to have to pay a premium to get this grown. And we could quantify that quite well rapidly with NIR. So when we came to licensing and commercialization, like I said, we had an end user. We put it out for bid. The Texas A&M AgriLife system has been rather promoting the IP and value of their materials, not just in sorghum, but in all grain and breeding program crop development. And we offered this, and we had three or four people come back and bid on this. And the license that we eventually ended up with was with a commercial company that had a history of developing specialty products, Silver Palette. And their obligations are in grain production and processing, product development and marketing, as you would expect them to do. But they are responsible for getting the grain grown, contracting with growers, finding processors who will process it. That grain into the form they want and then move into product development and marketing. Our obligations to this continue because, again, we couldn't just hand this off to a seed company. No seed company would take it because the acres of production were too small for them to have a marketable interest in it. So what we do is parental line maintenance. We basically maintain breeder stock of both parent lines, and then we contract out for seed company or seed production with seed companies who process, clean, and bag that seed for us, and then we store it. We ship the seed directly to the producers that our contractor says is growing it for him in the quantity that he does, and that's how we work the system. The system's been in place now. This is the third or fourth year. Acreages are growing. They're still small. We're still around 1,000 acres. We're up to 1,000 acres now. We're growing incrementally, doubling almost every year. But it is an example of starting out small with something with a small margin in terms of its area of production, and we're seeing it grow. In the meantime, since then, we've since licensed three more hybrids of similar line, similar veins, and similar end uses to both this company and other companies as well. I'm done, Ann.